Mr. Arntz, are we ready for roll call?
I think we're ready for roll call now. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Arnold.
I'm here.
Mr. Burbeau.
Here.
Ms. Bright.
Here.
Ms. Compton.
I'm here.
Mr. Gibson.
Here.
Mr. Hammond.
Here.
Mr. Heller.
Here.
And I see we have Ms. Andy Pease is taking the place for Ms. Marks today. Ms. Pease?
Here.
Mr. Newton?
Here.
Ms. Ortiz-Legge?
Yes, here.
Thank you. Mr. Pichon?
Here.
Mr. Storton?
Here.
Mr. Enns?
Here.
We have a quorum, Mr. Enns.
Wow, looks like we have a full house. Welcome, everyone. We'll go to the Pledge of Allegiance, and I'm going to ask John Pichon to lead us, and the rest can mute and follow along.
Okay, please rise.
Join me. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Enns, you're muted.
You're still muted.
Robert, you're on mute.
Now. How about now?
Can hear you.
Oh, are we back?
We're back.
You're back.
Okay, thank you, everyone. With that, I'll open the meeting to public comment for items not on the agenda. Anyone wishing to speak for items not on the agenda? Patty, are you doing that or Barbara?
I got it today, Mr. Enns. Thank you. At this moment, if a member of the public wishes to make a comment, you may select the raise hand button found at the bottom of your screen. Or if you are on the phone, you may press *9. This is for items not on the agenda. I do have one. Give me 1 second, Ms. Greening. Mr. Greening, sorry.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and I just wanted to alert the board and staff. Next Tuesday, the County Board of Supervisors at 9 a.m. has consent item 3, request to approve a sole source contract with MSW Consultants in an amount not to exceed $32,050 to perform a cost-benefit analysis of the county's participation in the SLOW IWMA and provide staff direction to confirm the scope and schedule for considering withdrawal. And I looked at the plan for the contract for the consultants, and it definitely looks at the pros and cons from the county's point of view. It has nothing that I could see to look at whether the agency as a whole would continue to be viable in the absence of the county. And it certainly had nothing whatsoever to look at the financial impacts on the cities were the county to pull out. In other words, if the IWMA staff were still responsible for all of the work it does, but had fewer taxpayers contributing, only the ones from the incorporated cities, I would assume that the city's burden would go up. We'd be losing a considerable economy of scale. So I'm mentioning these things so that everyone will look at agenda item 3 and express your interests, whether your preference would to be to deter the county from undertaking such a study, or whether it would be to make sure that the study actually incorporates and protects the interests of other players than the county itself. So this is a particular warning to the board members representing incorporated cities, because you could be very much affected by an action by the county. Anyway, that is on their schedule, 9 a.m. next Tuesday, agenda item 3. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Anyone else?
I do. Am I unmuted? Yes, I am. I have Janine Rands. Janine, you should be able to unmute yourself.
Hi, yeah, this is Janine from San Luis Obispo. Say, on the weekend, I was out camping at Oceano Memorial Campground, and was disillusioned, disgusted, discouraged at the amount of trash being put in a 90-gallon blue bin, and right next to it was the gray dumpster, completely over full and flowing. Monday morning, it was emptied, and the blue bin, and I believe the gray bin was completely empty, but by Tuesday morning, the blue bin was full of plastic bags and food waste and bottles. It was shocking to know that, you know, here at our county parks, 35 years into IWMA's at work, people are still, we still don't have it right. And so I would like to see that the county invest in what we see all over Oregon and Colorado, like a three bin system. Here's glass, here's paper, here's tin, or, you know, tin cans. And so that people start to do it right. That's what I would like us to focus on. And then across the street was a state park. There again, there was no good recycling system for people, and people are just throwing, regardless of what it is, into your blue bin. And so obviously that whole bin is contaminated, might contaminate your whole load. Thanks a lot, and I look forward to some change at the county parks.
All right, thank you, Janine. Barbara, do we have anyone else?
I have no one else for public comment.
Okay, thank you for that. And we will go to staff report, item number 5, executive director's report. Brooks.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. So our expenses are on pages 47 through 51. So if you have any questions, please let me know. I wanted to mention last month, we had mentioned asking the haulers for some of their most recent charges from hauling, so we could determine or better dial in how much we needed for the rate increase. And I wanted to say all of the haulers gave us that data. And so we wanted to say thank you and let you know that. The Morro Bay HHW usage agreement has now been executed, and it's attached to the agenda. It came in last minute for the executive committee. So we have until August of next year to work on either an extension or what to do with the site. Science Discovery has added two additional staff to help with the SB 1383 rollout on the educational side. And the two staff positions that were approved last month, we've advertised, and we will be conducting interviews. I think it's this Friday and next Friday. And then we were also directed to bring back the cost of a polystyrene letter and to go to affected businesses and nonprofits, et cetera. And so the cost of that letter is approximately $4,000. So that would be going out in the next couple of weeks, and it would basically outline how to comply and how to file the exemption. And then I also want to talk a little bit, so let me stop there and just say, any questions on any of those items right there?
Anyone wishing to ask questions on those? Seeing no one, Brooks, go ahead.
OK, Okay, and then we also want to discuss the franchise term sheet. So remember, we have to align over 20 franchise agreements throughout the county with 1383, and I believe there were 26 pages of definitions in 1383. It's probably as long or longer than most of the franchise agreements themselves. And since the agreements are probably decades old, the need to be updated with this anyway. But also, we're trying to make them consistent and so that the messaging throughout the jurisdictions is the same regarding all the programs that we manage, and 1383 implementation is the same for everybody. So when we send out information to help people comply and understand it, it's the same messaging through all the franchises because they're all the same. We also, like I mentioned before, are introducing best practices regarding franchises. And so those originally we sent it to the the haulers or franchisees back in February. So they saw it first, then we sent it to the jurisdictions in March, and then we've had a couple meetings with that. And so Rob will be on the call here in a minute to talk about 1383. But the idea here is now we will go and individually help the jurisdictions negotiate those franchises based on this term sheet. So everybody's talking the same terms. And then we were asked last month to bring back what our educational efforts are. And so our primary focus is with businesses. So we spend about $300,000 a year, and we go on site to about 4,000 businesses. This is really critical because small businesses especially don't have an environmental person telling them what the state passes. And when the state passes new legislation, they don't make any effort to notify these businesses directly. So the business basically has no knowledge that this occurred. And I'm sorry, I don't know why it's advancing on its own. They don't know why it occurred. They don't know it occurred, and they don't know how to comply. And so we're tailoring a program to go out with them, tell them how to comply. We provide them with the materials, the handouts, and even the bins. And then these are typically businesses that have a lot of hourly employees and there's high turnover. So the staff and the managers can change every year. And so we're going back, and when they have turnover, we go back and help them again. So this is a fantastic program. Again, it's about $85 per visit, so it's really inexpensive too. The education program for students is a little less money. We spend about $180,000 a year, but we do over 30,000 students with an hour to 2 hours of training. And I also want to mention these 22 adult or community education events have been drawing over 100 people each. So again, it's very inexpensive. It's about $5 a person to get with 1 to 2 hours of training. And then I won't belabor this too much. You've seen a lot of this, but we do get a lot of phone calls, and our website and social media outreach is tremendous. So we get 228,000 hits a year, and they average spending 1 to 2 minutes, which is about 6,000 hours on our website. And then we do a lot of social media touches, hundreds of thousands. We get over 500,000 of the digital impressions for people in our geo market, or whatever that's called, people doing searches from their cell phone or their computer. So again, extensive outreach on social media. Which brings us to the whole idea of rebranding and drawing all this together. We kind of have standardized colors, we kind of have standardized messaging, but nobody knows what IWMA is. And so we've been, again, working on this logo for a little while, and we've mentioned this, the idea of being able to come up with a moniker that gives not only our function and purpose and reason region, but it draws it all in. So the W kind of, it's not just slow as a region, but the W connotates what we're trying to do, which is slow down waste. And then we also have the elements that we do, which is the organics, the recycling, and the disposal. And then again, you can see from the color scheme and the graphics, they all kind of align. So these are the business labels that the business program is putting out. These are the ones on the carts, and that are going, the green label will go out on the food bins. So it all is coming together really nicely in this universal system with the same colors, same patterns, and now slow waste versus IWMA. Oh, and we're able to reserve the domain name slowwaste.org. So that is available for us. Also, the executive committee asked if I would just review some of the considerations or impacts to anybody leaving the JPA. So I know we've discussed it again, but just so everybody's clear, we were formed in 1994 because of an Integrated Race Management Act, which required a plan. And it also mandated the 50% diversion, which we met as a group, but there was all kind of elements to determine that 50%. And we aggregated all the numbers. So if anybody were to leave, everybody would have to re-implement that plan and revise the numbers. And this was a pretty large effort, took a lot of time and money to develop in 94. And it would be very extensive for anybody to do today. But it does have to be done. Even though we're focused on 1383, this is just an existing program we don't talk about much, but it has to be, all this has to be done. Then the existing 42 programs that we currently do, all of those, every jurisdiction's on the hook for those. So everybody would have to do them and they'd have to be realigned or recreated for an agency that's not doing them. And lest we forget, it's 7 months till we have to have 1383 implemented and the recurring monitoring reporting going on. And then the revenue streams, everybody's charged the same and all the money's come to one pot. So the jurisdictions or the haulers and the landfills have never had to figure out whether the customer or the route is city or county or any jurisdiction, because it all comes to us. And that would all change. They'd have to figure that out. And then auditing that would obviously be much more difficult. And last but certainly not least, the uniformity of servicing and our messaging that we send out is universal because we all have the same programs and everybody can participate without regard to jurisdiction or boundary. And so the citizens would be hugely impacted on this because then the programs or the level of service could change and the messaging could change and just be very difficult for them. And the estimated cost we've talked about before, 1383, implementation would be about $500,000 a year, according to HF&H. And then using that same math, the 42 programs that we currently provide at about $2.5 million a year, we would estimate that that would increase by about 50%. So the total cost would be almost $2 million a year more if we were to provide the same programs independently. And I know I talked to Mr. Minery about this, and he was going to talk a little bit about the legal implications. So, Jeff, would you mind jumping in here?
Sure. President Nance, directors of the board, just off the, as an initial matter, what we would need to expect would be an understanding of what the future looks like for the IWMA. And it would certainly require an almost immediate amendment to the joint powers agreement. For example, currently the county is defined as including all unincorporated areas within the county, and that's the definition in the JPA. We know that the county is the designated agency pursuant to the government code within the JPA. In addition, the JPA requires that to establish a quorum for meetings of the board, we need at least one member of the Board of Supervisors. And of course, there would be a discussion that would be necessary as to what is the best result for the authorized districts who are within the unincorporated county areas, but now participate in the current IWMA through a memorandum of agreement. And so those are issues that would need to be addressed. Those are the immediate issues that would need to be addressed. Certainly an issue of establishing a quorum in the designated agency, because we can't really have a meeting without those changes. But we are working on these. We are ahead of it and consistently working towards the implementation of SB 1383 on a regional basis so that we're prepared for whatever actions your board decides to take in the future. And with that, I'm available for any questions.
Robert, I have a couple of questions, if I may.
Keith, go ahead, please.
Thank you. Obviously, any of the members pulling out will be a big impact to our agency and efforts. And if the county does move forward with this analysis, I imagine, I have been told and I haven't confirmed, that it could take a couple of months to even get the analysis completed. So from my perspective, it creates some limbo land for all of us and some confusion as to our ongoing operational economic impacts, either moving forward until we hear word from the county or even afterwards. And it does make it a little confusing as to how we address expenditures and contracts and commitments and things like that moving forward and keeping stability within the organization. And also the retention of staff is a little concerning to me and future staff, given the limbo that we're in. So my question kind of relates to how can we encourage all of us to stay together moving forward? And I don't know if this is the exact time I should ask this question, but since you're here and I have that opportunity, it probably would require a bigger conversation. But I'm curious by any members of this board, if there's any desire as we move forward and look at the potential implications about memorializing in an amended JPA. I don't know how quickly that can be done, but can we say that we will concentrate on state mandated ordinances only from this point forward in order to put that into agreement, memorialize it, and add it as part of our common practice when we move forward? And I do this as a means to try to draw some consensus and understanding that we all need to work together. And I think we are much better and more effective working together. So I guess that's my question to Jeff legally. What would you need to do? And is there any appetite by members of this board to try to come to some understanding so we can move together for longer? We've been together 25 years. It'd be nice to stay together another 25 more.
President Enns?
Yes.
May I interject?
Yes.
Thank you. Director Storton, thank you for the question. We have to be a little bit careful because this item is not on the agenda as a discussion item. So I believe what you're doing is trying to take a temperature of the room, so to speak, as far as bringing an item like this back within the parameters you suggest. And certainly it would be appropriate to get a sense of where the board is on that. It would certainly have to come back as an agenda item. And I think there are a number of things to discuss. And I don't know if the appropriate time would be before the county has actually completed its analysis or not, but those are issues of process that belong with your executive director and you, the board. So as far as legally, it would just be a procedural matter of bringing this as a discussion item, either at the next meeting or a special meeting, if preferred.
Would that be need to made in the form of a motion?
If there's concurrence, a direction to staff would be fine.
I'll just leave it open for discussion then, for as far as we can go to get to that point, if people are interested.
Yeah, maybe bring that up in future agenda items.
Yes, I'm concerned about discussing this when it's not on our agenda.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, Bruce Gibson. Why are we even talking about this at all today? There's been no, there's no proposal out there that's going to suggest any change to the JPA at this point. I don't think it's productive until we have some idea that something's going to happen. And I don't see that, any issues of that arising anytime soon.
Okay, thank you, Bruce. And again, I'm concerned about discussing things that aren't on the agenda. And I think that Eric Greening pointed us in a direction that says that there will be some information coming forward and a decision will be made somewhere down the line. And I'm sure we'll see it back on our agenda when it's appropriate. So thank you, Bruce. And thank you, Keith.
Thank you.
Anyone else having comments or questions of Brooks?
Karen Bright here. I have a couple of questions, one on the JPA information, if I might.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. So the numbers that we have here, the estimated cost increases, are those numbers, do they pertain to all the remaining agencies? So would it be, say, $500,000 a year for Grover Beach or Royal Grande, Morro Bay, or is that for individual agencies?
No, that's in aggregate. So yes, everybody's cost would go up by that amount. So if you split up, then everybody's would be that percentage of the split.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Is it appropriate for me to ask a question regarding the food recovery kits at this time, or shall I wait for that?
No, the next update is HF&H on the SB 1383 implementation, and that's part of that. So yeah, fire away.
Okay, thank you. The food recovery kits, who receives those 20 kits?
Brooks, do you want me to jump in on that?
Yes, please do.
Yeah, this is an idea that seed funding for small edible food diversion organizations who are willing to volunteer for this food collection, again, of edible food, but they actually lack the tools to do it safely. So in a slide that Brooks is going to show coming up, and it'll be on the right-hand side, you'll see things like a wheeled cooler that's oversized. You'll see thermal blankets and thermometers. We need 3 cold storage thermometers and infrared thermometers, and even a scale. Because if you remember, SB 1383 requires us to increase our edible food diversion by 20% to those in need. So we not only need to safely transport it, but we'll need the scales to weigh everything for CalRecycle. Now, these kits, we're roughly estimating cost about $650 each. So with this seed funding, we're looking at maybe doing 15-ish should be available, if that helps answer that question.
So who's going to be, is staff going to be doing this weighing and delivering and so on?
Actually, no. What happens is we're working closely with the San Luis Obispo Food Bank and their 80 agency partners. And these are going to be going to the small agency partners. Okay.
Okay. That makes sense to me. Thank you. I appreciate that clarification.
You're welcome.
And I have one other question, if I might, and that is regarding the budget. May I ask that at this time?
Well, can you wait till we get to that and right after the update, and then let me go through it. And then if I don't cover it, then.
Yes. Thank you.
Chair Enns, I have a couple of questions for Brooks. Jeff Heller.
Jeff Heller, please go ahead.
Thank you, sir. So Brooks, the business outreach program budgeted at $330,000 a year. Yes, is that a new program or is that an extension of an existing program? Can you tell me a little about that?
Yeah, no, that's status quo. We've always been doing that because the commercial recycling side has had some mandates going back several years. So no, that's been ongoing and we would continue that. We would just add the 1383 element to it.
Okay. And is that something you do every year or do you wait for restaurants to reach out to you? How does that work?
No, we've been doing it to all kinds of businesses. Just now the focus is going to shift to restaurants because of the edible food and the 1383. In the past, it's been just more generic recycling, which they have been mandated to do. And then it added, they had to do organics as far as their green waste, and now it's the food waste. So it's been ongoing for many years, I would say 8 or more, and now we're just adding the 1383 element to it.
Okay. And then is the same thing true for the school outreach program at $180,000? In other words, is that your typical annual budget for that outreach?
Yeah, just my understanding is that in the past, you know, our revenue has kind of ebbed and flowed a little bit, especially with tonnage. And so if we had a leaner year, we probably cut back those programs a little bit. And then but this is about our normal.
Okay. And then last, just a comment. I think the rebranding is great. It looks really good. I like that very much. So those are my questions. Thank you, Chair Enns.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Good questions.
Robert. John Hammond, question for Brooks.
John Hammond, please go ahead.
Yeah. Brooks, on the estimated cost increases, who came upon these numbers? How did we figure these numbers?
Well, the 1383 costs were done by HF&H, and they did it line item by each program. And so I just used the basic concept of a 50% increase based on our current programs. I didn't drill down into great detail on this. I hadn't been asked to do it. Just kind of giving a ballpark.
Okay, so it really isn't super accurate, but it's kind of a generalized value to plan for each agency.
Correct. If you're going to run the programs the way they currently are and provide 52 weeks a year of HHW service and reach out to thousands of school children, the, you know, keep the programs where they are, this is just a rough estimate.
Okay. Thank you, Brooks.
Okay. Thank you, John. Anyone else? Okay, Brooks, back to you.
Okay. Thank you. We Rob is on the call and he's going to give us an update on the strategic plan, SB 1383. And also we were asked to cover the timeline. So I've got a couple slides on that. So take it away, Rob.
Yeah, great to be with you again, board. We've been hard at work since the beginning of the year on this. We meet weekly with the IWMA team, at least for a half an hour a week, sometimes more than that in multiple meetings as we've got product to move forward. We're meeting monthly with the TAC group. We're meeting monthly with the Holler group. And we've actually had a couple of special meetings with each of them to get all of the appropriate parties in the room to have some of these discussions. As Brooks shared earlier, we've been very focused on the franchise agreement amendments. Those are on the critical path. We've shared a couple of drafts now of a term sheet, fully fleshed out language. And now we're preparing individual member agency agreements. Those should be developed and in each of your city staff and county staffs and CSD staff's hands over starting Monday, Tuesday of next week, and then over the subsequent weeks for agencies that got us their franchise agreements a little bit later. So we intend to have all of those delivered by around the first week of June and in folks' hands. And then again, we'll be supporting the negotiation between each of the individual member agencies and their service provider. Once we're done with that, the next item on the critical path is to start working on the policy documents, the ordinances. And one of the first formative decisions to be made around the ordinances are what ordinance sits with IWMA as an umbrella ordinance and which policies get brought into individual municipal codes and sort of where that handshake is between the regional group and the individual members. So we'll be working with member agency staff and member agency legal counsel around that. We'll be sharing drafts of the documents, obviously with the haulers as they're a key stakeholder to this as we develop them. And those are intended to be brought forward to city councils and boards later in the year. One of the things that we're cautious about with the policies is that we are getting evolving interpretations from CalRecycle around a number of really key issues that will go into these policies. Things like the extent of self-haul that is allowed and which type of self-haul is allowed and what programs can be covered by that. And so as their interpretation is evolving, we're tracking that and we're making sure that the right versions get into your agreements, get into your policies. But because of this evolving interpretation that they have and some disagreements that we have over the interpretation that they're making, we're continuing to work through those issues with CalRecycle and don't want to put policies in front of the city councils and boards until we're confident that that's really what you need and that the ball isn't going to move on us again. As part of that, both the franchise and the policy documents contain information around contamination monitoring. We've got a good idea of how that program will work. And we're moving forward with some of the practical aspects of that, but really want to wait till we get through the negotiations with the haulers to finalize that and to establish the processes and systems that IWMA will use to do that contamination monitoring. We got a little bit of an update on the edible food recovery. That's another big piece, and hats off to Patty and Kelly, who have been very engaged in that and really moving that forward successfully. That is a challenging effort right now with COVID and the shelter in place orders and food bank being so overwhelmed in its mission right now, as well as the other feeding agencies. So it's been great that you've been getting that partnership. And again, credit to the staff for doing that outreach. I know in a lot of the other counties that I'm working right now, the food banks have not had the capacity to really engage in this process. So you've got a great partner here. On procurement, we're going to be doing some workshops with member agencies to support them with technical assistance around procurement of recovered organic waste products. We're also working through the franchising processes and through discussions with the compost facilities
about what options there are for that and what capacity is there. And we had a really productive conversation with HCI. They're a very willing partner, willing to donate product and do giveaways and things like that for the community. So that was another great opening. And I know that other composters and organics operators in the county will have a similar interest. So we're very encouraged by that. I think that'll be a real key to making that successful. The IWMA has a really robust education and outreach program. You got a little bit of update on that. And we believe that with some minor adaptations to messages and communication channels that you already have, you'll be fully compliant with 1383. And again, because of the focus of this board and this agency on education first and minimizing compliance issues, minimizing monetary penalties, there is a fair bit of investment going into that. And as Brooke showed with the outreach to businesses, that really is the key to making this successful without fines and penalties. On the record keeping and reporting, staff has been working closely with Recyclist to get that fleshed out. I've got some calls coming up with Recyclist to urge them to move forward with some of the expanded functionality for SB 1383 so that you guys can get a little bit ahead of some of those things and make sure that you fully understand the data gathering needs and we can start pulling all of the different data partners together on this. Again, the haulers have been responsive, several of them, to our requests for this data. We've had a little bit of a mixed bag over the past few months, but the response rate is getting better and we're very hopeful about this new regime. Monitoring and enforcement is going to be a priority when we get into the policy process. And so we have not dug too deep into that, except to the extent that it affects the franchise agreements. And then the infrastructure development really falls out of these other processes. We'll get a clearer sense after we're done with the negotiations of what the demand is and when that demand will come online and when additional capacity may need to come online for organics processing. That infrastructure development was a five-year effort where the rest of these things, as you can see from the schedule, really need to largely be completed this year, some trailing a little bit into next year. So we're very focused on those first items right now. So that's the update on where we are with implementation of SB 1383. Again, I know that this is the primary focus for Kelly, and Patty spent a huge amount of her time working this through, and I really appreciated working with both of them. It's been a lot of great energy and enthusiasm towards getting this right. So you've got a great team there.
Okay, if there are any questions, otherwise I'll move to budget.
I have a question if I can ask. This is John Pashon. Rob?
Please go ahead, John.
Okay, I just, Rob, wanted to see how many conversations you've had with the haulers. Have they been all of them, half of them, a couple of them? Just wanted to see what their thoughts are on this plan.
Great question. We've had monthly meetings with them plus one additional meeting. At the monthly meetings, we get better than half of them. Sometimes all of them attend. The separate meeting that we had discrete to talking about the franchise term sheet and the specific franchise language, all of them were in attendance, as was their attorney. There were not a large number of questions asked. They were mostly taking the information in. One of the specific things that they've requested and we're fulfilling is that they'd like to see the language against their individual agreements, not sort of theoretical language or model language, but how is this going to work in my franchise agreement in the county or in Arroyo Grande or in Paso? And so that's the process that we're in right now, and we'll be delivering to the member agencies the first drafts of those agreements next week. So we've had four or five conversations with the haulers so far this year. In most cases, almost all of them are in attendance.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, John. Any other questions for Rob?
Mr. Chair, Andy Pease. Thank you for the presentation. I'm wondering at the state level that the legislation that I that is kind of rolling along to perhaps delay, I guess not the implementation, but perhaps the enforcement. And I'm wondering how impactful that is for our effort. It seems like we're targeting full compliance, and in terms of the advocacy at the state level, how hard do we need to continue to push for some relief on enforcement?
That's a really great at the legislative. Really great question. So SB 619 is moving along. It's made it through the committee process so far. It was pulled and redrafted at one point. And in the redrafting, the author, I think, aligned it better with what the governor might actually agree to. The governor signaled very strongly that he would veto the former version of the bill. And that's why it got pulled and redrafted. So what they're focused on now is what they're calling a reasonable effort towards implementation, and that if you've made a reasonable effort towards implementation, that they will back off on any penalties while you implement remaining portions of the law that may take you more time or money or whatever. I think it's important to remember kind of two things about this. One is the governor's signing deadline is like October 10th this year. And so we may not know one way or another whether we've gotten some relief until October. And if you plan on it and don't get it, then you've got, you know, 60 days or less to get this implemented, and that would be unreasonable to accomplish. If they do pass this, they're going to be looking at what efforts have you made. And my sense from some of the discussion that's gone on at the state level is, if you heard about this bill and you pulled the plug on all of your efforts waiting for what was going to happen, they're not going to consider that a reasonable effort. And so it's been the orientation of staff and of ours that we're going to continue through this. We're going to make every reasonable effort to implement everything on the schedule that's in the regulations today. But understanding that if this relief is granted, there may be things like the procurement by each of the member agencies of recovered organic waste products that might come later, that some of the record keeping around paper procurement might come later, that some of these more administrative details could fall into place later on. The good news for you is most of your communities have the operational programs that are required. So the big costs are already out there and included in your rates. What we're dealing with now is really buttoning up a lot of the administrative and record keeping and sort of supportive systems to this. And so, again, I think the state will be more forgiving if this is passed around those administrative sorts of things. I hope that's helpful.
Super helpful. Thank you. It sounds like a plan for the best, and hope we don't need it, but might be there if we do. Okay, great. Thank you.
Albert, I don't know if you can see my hand. But it's Debbie, and I had a question for Rob.
Please go ahead, Debbie.
Thank you. So, Rob, in your little chart you just showed us, or the multiple charts, you talk about monitoring and enforcement that will, I thought you said, affect the franchise agreements. There we go. That. And are those charts that you're showing us, these are IWMA charts, correct? What our objective as an IWMA are. So SB 1383 must have enforcement coming down from the state as well. Which agency would be enforcing SB 1383?
That's a great question. So the regulation sits with PalRecycle, and they are the enforcement agent for it. It's actually an airborne regulation that has been delegated to CalRecycle. So both the Air Board and CalRecycle theoretically have enforcement authority, but CalRecycle has been delegated that authority. That line 1.8 on monitoring and enforcement, there's sort of two phases to it, and you see it in the longer term chart down on the bottom. Phase one is what we need to do in 2021 to set us up for 2022. That's really monitoring. There are no monetary penalties required or fines required until January of 2024, but you're still supposed to be monitoring as though you were doing enforcement, and in place of enforcement, you're supposed to be doing education. So we'll sort of set up a test system that will be monitoring and doing education rather than enforcement during those first 2 years, and then we'll be building the real enforcement system that will come with fines and penalties
setting that up to be effective January 1 of 2024, waiting really until the end of that timeline. And based on the direction we've received from the board in prior meetings, the intent is that that enforcement, the component that actually has a fine attached to it or a penalty attached to it, would happen at the member agency level. That we could do the monitoring at the regional level and the education at the regional level, but when it escalates to an enforcement event, that would be at the discretion of each agency.
So you're talking about, I just want to make sure I understood this. You're talking in those charts about the IWMA itself becoming or having some enforcement authority. And then you're, I think, talking about putting that enforcement authority, in other words, the IWMA monitoring enforcement will be folded into the franchise agreements that each one of the haulers or the landfills has with the different local agencies. Am I getting this right?
It's a little bit complex, so sorry if I'm muddying the water. There's some different aspects of this. So as you said, there's CalRecycle enforcing on each agency. So if each agency fails in any way under the law, theoretically in January of 2022, CalRecycle can enforce against the agency. Separately, they want you to set up monitoring protocols for the next 2 years. For the first 2 years of the law. And those monitoring processes will look a lot like enforcement processes, except instead of ending with a fine, they'll end with education. So as long as that's the case, through that educational process, the IWMA would take care of it. In January of 2024, that education turns into a notice of violation and escalation to fines and penalties. At that juncture, we would turn the enforcement portion of that to each member agency to do the code enforcement actions that get escalated to them. The IWMA could still do the monitoring, still do the education, do all the supportive work, but just hand over that enforcement piece at the end. And again, that wouldn't happen until 2024. So there's three different kind of phases of this to monitor.
So what that looks like kind of in layman's terms is the IWMA must be doing some kind of monitoring or something. In other words, doing the work for the, let's call it the county, then we'll know. We're talking about a specific agency. IWMA is doing the work, monitoring, and when it comes to the actual enforcement penalties, I guess you say, you notify the county and say, hey, this hauler or this landfill is doing something wrong, and here, you need to take care of it. Is that what you're saying?
The hauler, the landfill, or it could be a generator. It could be a resident or a business or a multifamily property owner or something like that.
Okay, thank you.
But you've got it right. That's perfect.
All right, thank you, Debbie. Anyone else? Questions for Rob? Thank you, Rob, for being here. Thank you for the report. Brooks, I'll turn it back to you.
Okay, thank you, board. I don't want to belabor the budget, but I just want to review this one more time because the approval comes in June, and I want to make sure everybody's comfortable with the direction we're headed. And, you know, there's never been a rate change since these rates were implemented. So I just want you to understand that and be comfortable with this. So the snapshot here is that normally we would take in about $2.5 million. And we would spend about $2.5 million primarily on the HHW and education programs. We know that SB 1383 long-term costs are going to be about another million. So you're going to go from 2.5 to 3.5, hence the need for the rate increase. And then temporarily this year, we have a bubble of implementing costs and a few capital costs. So that's really what I want to discuss today is those capital costs or discretionary expenses. But generally, we're going to go from a $2.5 million a year budget to a $3.5 million budget with this 1 year extra $1 million increase, which we will spend down our savings. And the whole plan here is to keep the 1.5 that's shown right here, which is $1 million for our HHW closure fund, which cannot be touched, and then a $500,000 emergency fund should there be an accident or some kind of catastrophe at the HHW sites. So the plan here is to never touch those funds and then to kind of keep it in the black because we just don't have any other form of revenue other than the tipping fees or the hauling fees. So This is our projected annual revenue. Again, this third column projects that early in the year, we will have a rate increase. The one thing I want to point out, and it was noticed by at least one board member, that our tipping fees that were projected back in 2021 or for this budget cycle was really the 1920 budget, which was, remember, was a carry forward because of COVID and working through the strategic plan. Nobody wanted to take the time to review a budget that we knew was going to change. And so, and then this was before we had an accountant, and we really did this based on actual tonnages and really did deep investigation, which is what these numbers are based on. And then this is our expenses. Again, to highlight, with 1383, we would have new additional staff. We would have one-time expenses for the implementation. So that's the main reason for the increase there. And then here's where I really want to get your discussion or your feedback on the capital projects. So we have $200,000 for foundation work at the existing office. Now, again, it's highly likely that if it, once we get this going, they're going to say it needs an entire new foundation, which means you've got to lift it and disconnect all the utilities. And so you'd have to vacate the building during that time, which would be an added expense. And then if we do the work, we have to pay prevailing wage. So if you sold the building as is, you probably could avoid that temporary housing and avoid that double the cost for prevailing wage. But the plan is in June or July, depending on how busy the board agendas are, to assemble that committee that we talked about. And then that group would help guide us in this. And if we choose not to spend the $200,000 on the building, it would stay in the budget and then go towards the next office space. We got a forklift in here, which again, that's just kind of a normal thing. One's wearing out every year or so. And then the other big expense is $134,000 for a new HHW facility. It's San Miguel. Again, that's an area where they have to drive about 20 miles to get to the next nearest site. And this is the total cost for the entire facility now based on actual estimates. And the good news here is that the water district there would actually operate it. So we would just have to pay for Stericycle to come in and remove the material and recycle and dispose of it. So it would be one of the more efficient sites as far as recurring costs. So any feedback on these capital expenses? Because what if I don't hear anything negative, basically what's going to happen is these are going to be in the budget next month for approval.
Robert?
Yes, question for Brooks.
You know, we talked about this in the executive committee, Brooks. So I just want to make sure that this is not really a question, but that you can do this. And that is, if we put the $200,000 in the budget, that obviously we wouldn't expend it until our committee reviews whether it might be better to sell in this building, buy another one, and also that we wouldn't engage in any of these, that type of expenditure until the rate increase that's suggested would be in place. Because obviously if we don't increase our revenue, we can't afford $200,000 for this.
Yes, that's both items are correct. Thank you for the clarification.
Okay, thank you, Charles. Anyone else? Okay, Brooks.
Okay, the next one we want your feedback on, because these are currently in the budget, and if we don't hear so, they would be in the budget in June. So we need you to speak now or forever hold your peace. The TAG grant, this would just, you know, we did this one time. It was very successful. So we added another 40 to this budget to do a second series later in the year. But what we're proposing is to put this in permanently, $40,000 a year for technical assistance grants. Again, we got a lot of feedback. It was all positive, local things, local jurisdictions. So we would like to keep that. And then I'll jump down to the seed funding for these edible food recovery kits. And you get the idea there of the scale and the thermal blankets and thermometer. This ensures that the food would actually still be safe for human consumption. And this, again, this is just a little stopgap to get these smaller places included. Again, Patty, we put this in as an estimate. We know it's about $650 each. So instead of 20, we do about 15 of them. And then the big one here is the County Blue Bag Program. And there was a formal request made in there. and Carolyn Berg is on the call here, so I can let her talk about it. But I would just sum it up. What we know so far is that the county homeless problem is without jurisdiction. It happens throughout the county, and this money would go towards the litter component of that. But now I'll turn it over to Carolyn if you're here, and you could go ahead and just give the board a little overview of that, this, and then take some questions on it.
Great. Thank you, Brooks. My name is Carolyn Berg, and I work with the County Administrative Office. And I really appreciate you just taking a few minutes to consider this request. I, as you'll see in your packet, starting on page 44, I submitted a letter requesting your board's consideration of up to $150,000 for support for this new region-wide pilot program, as Brooks mentioned. And I thought it might just help to give a really quick snapshot of the overall problem. I think Brooks put it well. It's homelessness is a challenge that is without boundaries. It touches all of our individual jurisdictions throughout the area and hits on a lot of impacts. And one of those is solid waste and hazardous waste that's, you know, throughout communities, waterways, and basically in non-landfill locations. And that's where, you know, as I was looking for different partners that might come forward for this a set of various regional initiatives, IWMA made sense as one that we wanted to reach out to. So of course, historically, as my letter notes, there's been a lot of dedicated resources and funding towards addressing and preventing homelessness, but I think all of our agencies and as residents, we can see that the problem continues to be a challenge. And so preventing and addressing homelessness is one of the key priorities of our county board of supervisors, as well as our state government, federal, a number of your cities, and local organizations throughout the area. And so I've been working with our county administrative officer, the local seven city managers, Caltrans, the Council of Governments, and our Homeless Service Oversight Council to try to come up with a potential new approach for some activities we could pursue. And essentially, the overall recommended focus is twofold. So we'd be first and foremost pursuing near-term action that addresses homelessness and the impacts of it. So that includes Blue Bag, among other initiatives. And then concurrently, we'll be doing rapid planning so that our region can start to have a more strategic focus on where our funding and resources go in the longer term so that we can make the greatest impact with limited resources. And essentially, collectively, what we're trying to strike is a balance of compassionate service to unhoused residents of our county, but also ensuring that we have order and public health and safety in communities. And that's where Blue Bag really comes in. And so last Tuesday, our County Board of Supervisors approved this multi-agency regional framework that's in your packets on page 48. And what I think is reaching out to the various agencies to see who might be able to help fund certain portions of a very big umbrella of activities we're pursuing. So as I mentioned, the near-term actions really focuses on the Blue Bag program, which you're being asked to consider in your budget. And that's really, I see it as a practical, cost-effective way of engaging our existing homeless encampment residents in collecting and disposing of the solid waste, hazardous waste, and sharps that exist within their camps, and moving that waste out of those non-landfill areas and into the proper settings. And right now, the cost estimate, I said up to $150,000. That was assuming we find 10 priority camps throughout the region with willing partners, you know, cities or otherwise. And that's just one initiative. We're also pursuing safe parking programs. So for vehicle-based homeless individuals, we'd be looking to set up priority sites throughout the region, and that's not on not being asked for you to help fund, but just wanted you to know that for awareness. We'll also be conducting longer term strategic planning initiatives with all of the agencies throughout the region, and certainly would welcome IWMA at the table there as well. And that's focused more on longer term initiatives we need to take to address homelessness. I think the most important part of all of this is really recognizing that as much as we've worked on this as a region, you know, we still have such a big challenge ahead. And I think all of our agencies are recognizing that no one agency can solve this alone. And so we really need to come forward and find a united path forward and be really strategic about how we place our limited resources to make the greatest impact. And so again, really focused on just bringing one part of the program to your board that's focused on, at least in my view, the IWMA mission of focusing on solid waste and hazardous waste and finding cost-effective solutions to some of these priority challenging camps throughout the area. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions on specifics if you'd like, and I'll hand it back to your board chair and Mr. Stair.
Okay, thank you, Carolyn. I had a simple question here in your report on page 45. You talk about the budget that the county's putting forward to deal with this homeless program. And I see two numbers here, the $10.6 million and the $157 million. And could you explain the difference in those two?
Certainly, I'd be happy to. Yeah, the county board, this during our current fiscal year, has dedicated $10.6 million of federal, state, and county funding towards a number of programs that have a direct benefit to homeless individuals or homeless programs. So that includes things like the community action teams you'll see here in the city of San Luis Obispo or in Paso Atascadero and roving throughout the region. And those are teams with law enforcement and a behavioral health specialist. And they go out and respond to someone who's challenged maybe in a mental health crisis or otherwise and is homeless out on the streets. So that's one example. But like I said, this goes towards a number of initiatives from case management for homeless individuals to housing to emergency shelter operations. And then the $157 million, I included that. That's broader, and that really focuses on the county's direct responsibility, acting as the social service and behavioral health service provider for our countywide residents. And that includes things like our CalFresh program and, you know, food stamps for families, general assistance to people who don't meet Medi-Cal requirements, operating our substance use treatment programs, and a number of other initiatives.
Okay, thank you, Carolyn. Questions from the board? Anyone else? Questions for Carolyn?
Chair Enns, Andy Pease.
Hi, Andy. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Carolyn, thank you for bringing this program forward. I'm wondering if you can, I understand there already was a pilot program for the use of blue bags, and that was really successful, and that's why it's coming. So I'm wondering if you can talk about kind of what makes this a pilot program, and then what about the ongoing expenses? This is $150,000 operational expense for year one, and then if it's successful, what's the ongoing plan to keep it going?
Great question. Thank you. Yeah, so back in 2019, I think your board had received updates on it, but the county, along with a number of partners throughout the region, developed a 4-week-long pilot program focused just in the city of San Luis Obispo on several waterway camps. And as you mentioned, it was, I think, highly successful in engaging the residents there and guiding them towards resources, but also just in cleaning up the sites themselves. And the reason we continued this as a pilot is, you know, that was one short-term attempt at it. And so we're looking at this as an expanded pilot. So basically looking at not just a 4-week-long program, because my understanding is one of the challenges of that first initiative was it was 4 weeks long, and then those who lived in the camp were moved out of the camp. And so, you know, not necessarily getting the street outreach and connection to resources we would have hoped for. So this would allow us to do a longer duration pilot and to test it out in different parts of the region too. You know, the populations in city of San Luis Obispo are different than those that you might find, say, in the riverbeds in Paso or elsewhere. And so that's why when working with the city managers and our county administrative officer, we continued to call it a pilot program, was this we really saw as an opportunity to expand out and attempt it in different geographic areas and with different partners to see how that fared. And then, as you mentioned, certainly if this were successful, you know, it will take a longer duration of time to build the additional shelter space and affordable housing units that are needed as, I think, the longest term solution here. And so if this were successful and agencies wanted to maintain it, I think we could assume around $150,000 of vendor costs, but obviously that's scalable depending on how many camps we're trying to reach. I believe our region has over 100 encampments, and those kind of ebb and flow depending on where people are moving to. Did that answer your question?
Right, so kind of more to come. If it's successful, we might be having the same conversation next year and just making the decision then. So, thank you.
Yeah, and I would, I guess, add to it, as I mentioned, we're trying to do some near-term action to really help people and public spaces in the immediate future. But we're concurrently doing a strategic planning initiative. So part of that would be looking at what have been the most effective strategies that our region has pursued. And so this will add more knowledge to that if Blue Bag is really a good longer term or middle term strategy.
Okay, thank you, Andy. Thank you, Carolyn. Anyone else? Questions for Carolyn Bird?
Robert, I have a couple of questions, please.
All right, Keith.
Thank you. Carolyn, thank you so much for the presentation. I was curious, what are some of the metrics you'll be looking for to determine success? And I imagine that there's an educational component to this as well. As we're entering camps, there's an opportunity to kind of educate those that are there about what's going on in the environment.
Thank you. Both really good questions. So some of the types of metrics we looked at before was tonnage of waste collected on each given week at each camp, tonnage of hazardous waste, because that was a distinction that was, of course, you're all well aware of, but the differences of what's being put into camps. Also, number of sharps or syringes that are collected at the camps and or at the nonprofit we work with at their office space. So those are some of the key metrics. We also looked at number of individuals. We can look at the number of individuals contacted, and hopefully we can find a way to also track who of those unhoused residents who is connected to services and actually pursues those. And that really helps to track the efficacy of not just having it be a short-term cleanup process. And then, as you mentioned, a big component of this is education. I think both of our communities themselves, the broader surrounding areas of, you know, the state of being unhoused, and then also education of those living in the camps of what resources might be available to them to help them, you know, into housing or into a substance use treatment, that sort of thing. And I didn't touch on it before, but part of our larger regional initiative this year is to develop a region-wide communication strategy. So looking at, you know, how do we really have more of a unified front on, you know, describing what resources are available to our unhoused population, and then also communicating among the broader residents of the area.
Okay, no, I appreciate that. And just as a side note, and I'll leave it to maybe you and Brooks to discuss should we approve this, but maybe there's some metrics that would be important for us to know as an organization as far as trash content. I know you mentioned about sharp counting and tonnage and things like that, but perhaps there's some other items that would be helpful for us to learn about. Thank you.
Yeah, Very good point. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Keith.
Robert?
Anyone else?
Yeah, Robert.
Charles?
Yeah, I have a question. I'm concerned about, and this is a very large amount of money relative to some of the other discretionary things we've done. And I'm concerned at this point in time, it seems that the county through the state and the federal government has received a lot of money for COVID-related things, which has also included some funding for homeless-related issues. The state is talking about spending literally billions of dollars in the next year on homeless-related issues. I'm concerned about why we're coming to the IWMA for this. I mean, obviously, we're talking about picking up trash. There's a lot of efforts with volunteer groups like Earthshine that goes around each community with groups and picks up a lot of trash out of creeks. We had a second recent event in Atascadero, and of course, a lot of that trash was related to homeless activity. I'm just concerned about us, about the county coming to the IWMA as the source of funding for this, particularly at a time where it seems there's a lot of money floating out there in the system for things related to homelessness, and that why some of those other sources of funding aren't being looked at in the next year or two at least as the source of funding for this type of program.
Again, that's a really good question as well. Originally, when Mr. Stayer and Mr. Horton and I were talking this through, was back in February or March, and so didn't have much of a sense of the governor's budget, to be frank. You know, we'd seen his January budget submittal, but a lot can change in the pending months after that. And so brought this forward because we're looking at local funding first, and then the reason I said up to $150,000 is really to the extent we can pull in grant funding, we will spare local agencies the cost of this as much as possible. But until we saw what funding came down and what strings were attached to it, didn't really know what grants we might be able to pursue. But as you mentioned, a lot of funding has been coming in for COVID-related response, particularly focused on homelessness. It's covered, I think it's generally been more focused on rapid rehousing to keep people out of homelessness or rapidly get them back into homes, street outreach, emergency shelters, so expanding those because they had less capacity in COVID times, and developing new affordable housing or multifamily homes like the Paso Project Home Key, or in Atascadero, the expansion of the Echo shelter there. So certainly you're absolutely right. There's a lot of funding that we see in the potential future. It's just not solid yet. And so until that really comes forward and we understand what's possible through the grants, we've been looking to the county board, the city councils, and the IWMA and SLOCOG as other potential funders to help in the meantime. And certainly the costs are scalable. So as I mentioned, I said up to $150,000. We'll be doing more in-depth planning with the cities and IWMA staff if you choose to move forward with this. And so we could sharpen the pencils here and scale down as needed, I think. But we would also be looking at the grants that are possible.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if it's Bruce.
Yes, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, Charles' question is a fair one. In response, let me make a couple of notes here. One is Carolyn's just mentioned up to $150,000. But the second is that the proposal coming here is a regional effort. The framework that Carolyn has been working on along with our CAO, Wade Horton, and all of the city managers is a full court press throughout the county on this. And as Carolyn mentioned in her lead-in, we're talking about 10 sites widely distributed throughout the county. And I would submit that every jurisdiction has encamped unhoused residents that this could benefit. I think that regional approach is key. And so I think coming to IWMA, as well as SLOCOG and the cities individually and the county as a whole, is a perfectly consistent result. I too endorse the idea that if we don't need a penny of $150,000 to make this work countywide, then let's leave that in the IWMA coffers. But if you look at the overall budget of IWMA and the way Brooks has crafted it, I think it fits in just fine. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you, Bruce. Anyone else for questions of Carolyn? Okay, I can't see hands raised on my screen, so when I offer you to speak up there, well, please do. That's the only way I'll know that you want to speak. Any more questions of Carolyn? Seeing none, thank you, Carolyn. Appreciate your comments. And Brooks, I'll take this back to you.
Thank you. Thanks, Carolyn. So then the question is regarding 1383 being the big cost out there. When do we need the rate increase? When do our reserves run out? So, and this is why I can tell you it's absolutely fantastic to have an accountant, which we've never had until recently. But the green line represents our monthly cash flow, and this is fairly consistent. The expenses are what's changing here. And again, they're exceeding our cash flow because of 1383 and again, these one-time costs this year. So even though we start out with this actual savings or surplus of 1.5 million, the expenses take their toll. And when we hit January to February, we actually go below zero. And now we're spending that emergency fund. And then we're complete, and this is bad, but then we're totally bust when we get to May because we can't touch the $1 million. So again, Barbara worked the same numbers and put in a rate increase in September. And so if we approve this in June, hopefully July at the latest, and Mr. Minery is working on whether it has to go through the Prop 218 or Prop 26 issues. And then so hopefully we'll have this to you in June. But if the rate effect were to be approved and take effect in September, we wouldn't actually see any funds until October. And so what happens to our rates, again, our cash flow goes down fairly quickly, but then when we start to get the additional bump of revenue, it levels out. And once we get to February, March, we're pretty much hovering around that $500,000 savings amount. And so we stop hemorrhaging cash and we balanced out and are funding everything. So what does the rate increase entail? And we've discussed this a little bit, but again, I just want to make sure you're clear what's happening here. The residential and commercial hauling costs, so every garbage can that's picked up in the county is currently paying 2%, and we propose to make that go to 4%. The one caveat here is that residents who are paying less than $50 a month are paying a flat fee of 30 cents. And so we propose to eliminate that. And so what does that look like? We go from about $900,000 a year to pretty much double. And how that works out in your monthly fee, if the average cost of service is $40, and this is rough, some people are paying 20 something, most people are probably paying closer to 40. So that's $500 a year you're paying in total cost. So 4% would be 19.20 cents, or about $1.60 a month. So the person who's paying 30 cents a month, that's under the $50 a month, is now going to go probably closer to this $1.60 a month. So it's an increase. We don't think it's dramatic, but it is an increase, and we want you to know that's what's happening. The landfill disposal fee, which has been $3 a ton since inception, would go to $4 a ton. And the percentage system would be very difficult there because there are so many different rates. So what we're just going to recommend is it's a $4 a ton with an annual CPI index. And since that's pretty much in everybody's contract, it would just be a seamless, and it would be a fractional amount, but at least it would keep up with inflation. So again, the same math, it would go from about $800,000. We'd see about a $300,000 increase because we get about 300,000 tons a year. So the bottom line with all of this is if you approve the rate increase and these funds that we've recommended as is, we would still maintain a $1.5 million emergency and HHW fund. And then we will bring back somewhere in June or July with a reserve policy. Right now, I would guesstimate that somewhere between 30 and 50% of our annual expenses. So any questions with all of that? Otherwise, what will happen is in June, we'll bring back the budget and you'll have it page by page, just like it is right now. And then we'll also bring back the rate increase amount or the actual rate increase resolutions.
Okay, questions from the board?
Robert, I have a question. Can you see me? I don't know if you can see me.
Sounds like Debbie.
Yes,
there you are.
Debbie. Yes, thank you. So Brooks, I'm just wondering about, was there some kind of fiscal study done to come to those numbers that we're asking on the fee increase to the customers out there? Or was it just a projection type of a work that we did to come up with those numbers?
We've modeled it about three different ways. We use the R3 audit, which was from 2016, 17, 18. So it wasn't the most current. Then we used the hauler data that the haulers just gave us based on this current last billing cycle. And then we also did a model using the 2019 census estimates. And so that's how we came up. And the idea here is to kind of, everybody is a part of SB 1383 and the programs that we're mandated to provide. And so this is a kind of way to shift that cost among everybody. And then there's certain people who obviously are getting the residential and commercial hauling. And so the bulk of the money is coming in from that 2% to 4%. But then there's a percentage of customers that are just using the disposal service at the landfill. And so they're a lesser portion of the pie. But we're still recommending that we increase that from 3 to 4. So it's a slight increase there. So does that answer your question?
Thank you. Yep. Sorry, my mute was back on. Thank you, Brooks.
All right, thank you. Okay, any other questions of Brooks? Brooks, I thought you did an excellent job of presenting this, and I would encourage us to move forward with the rate increase. It may take some time, depending on what Jeff Minery discovers in terms of the process we need to go through.
May I ask a question? Karen Bright here.
Karen Bright, please go ahead.
Thank you. So, Brooks, did I understand you correctly to say that there had not been a rate increase to these fees?
Yes, IWMA has not increased its fees, I believe, since they were conceived. The hauling fees may go up every year based on the CPI or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then there was I understand that everybody had a cost increase whenever we did, when the actual food waste diversion started a year ago. But those were unrelated to the actual 1383 costs that are applied to IWMA.
I see. Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate the clarification.
Robert, John Hammond, question for Brooks.
John Hammond, please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I just got back online here a little while ago and I missed a lot of this budget, but Brooks, when our haulers ask for rate increases to their customers, that has to go through a 218 process, doesn't it?
Yes, I believe that does. And Mr. Minery can chime in here as well to help.
Yes. President Enns, if I might.
Yes, please.
Okay, so the statutory scheme regarding SB 1383 does grant authority, your agency has authority to impose these additional increases. And that is through statute. We have the power to do so. Really, the question is how does that impact the franchises and the member agencies and whether or not they need to go through a 218 process And that's what I'm working on. I have been in touch with several city attorneys on this. And so I will be addressing that with them, because if they do need to go through a 218 process, we need to get that coordinated as quickly as possible based on our current timeframes. So I am on top of it.
Yeah, that's what I remember too, Jeff, that our rate hauler just went through it. Took a long time to go through that process, months and months and months. And so it's not overnight, not within a week or so. So it's something, again, I want to make sure everybody understands what we're getting into when we increase fees, that it's going to be passed down to the end user, basically. But that also takes time through the hauler itself to do so. So, all right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, John. And thank you, Jeff.
Robert, can I ask one more quick question? That John Hammond's question made me have another question.
Okay.
So what you guys are saying is this is not a fee that's been initiated by the haulers. It's a fee that's being initiated by us, the IWMA.
Yes, that's correct. This is to fund the new programs that are required under 1383.
Okay.
So I would say, in effect, it's an increase that's caused by the state rather than anyone else. Any other questions? Okay, seeing none, Brooks, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Enns. That concludes my oral report.
Okay, then we will go to the consent agenda, and I'll open that for public comment for matters on the consent agenda.
Okay, at this time, if a member of the public wishes to make a comment on any item on the consent agenda, please hit the raise hand button found on the bottom of your screen, or if you're on the phone, you may hit star 9. Okay, I do have one. Give me one moment. Where'd you go? Janine, I saw that you raised your hand, but then you lowered it. Did you still want to talk?
Yes.
Okay. Give me one second. Okay, Janine, go ahead.
Okay. I would like to make comments on number 11 and 12, but I saw later that the instructions that you will take public comment at each item. So is this the appropriate time to raise my comments?
Yes, this is
okay.
Do both 11 and 12.
All righty, great. I am making comments about the education efforts to 1383. Number one on the number 11 on the movie theater PSAs. With COVID keeping most people out of the theaters, and I noted only two theaters are going to be addressed. I just question that whole effort, and that these PSAs are, as one of my writers said, that it's like a 50-year-old approach. Kids today aren't even, using, they're streaming everything. The second is the whole billboard effort. And I noted that the company that's been selected to do this is from Fresno. Why don't we use a company that's local here and keep the money in town? But that the other effort to reduce billboards and visual pollution has been ongoing for years by state, federal, and county. And individual cities, we just don't need that extra trash. And then if it's not an electronic board, then where is that physical board going to go after the 6 months is over? Is it going to go back to landfill? So out for waste management, to be creating more waste, just smacks of a waste of our resources. And I sent in a letter full of other educational ideas. And I would really like us to focus on efforts using things that don't cause issues with the keep the highway clean of billboards and this PSA idea for only two. And I note, you know, we've got five other cities with some significant theaters like Paso Robles, Park Cinema, and Edwards down in Arroyo Grande. So we're limiting your audience to two small theaters. It just kind of makes me scratch my head. So I would really like us to consider the other things that I've submitted. And I'd love to be on a committee, on a think tank or workforce to think through things. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Janine. Barbara, anyone else?
I have no other hands raised.
Okay, thank you. Then we'll go directly to the consent agenda for the board. Anyone wishing to have an item pulled for separate discussion may indicate so at this time.
I have a question.
Yes, Lynn.
So my question is in regards to, there are several items on the consent agenda where we are okaying contracts and they vary in amount. Some are, you know, negligible, but we're committing ourselves on some contracts and long-term agreements or service agreements, et cetera. And as we've previously mentioned in this meeting, you know, we have this issue coming before our board of supervisors. So I'm concerned that we're committing to something for a future when we haven't even discussed this and had the study back at our board of supervisors. So I guess I would ask Jeff, what's the implication of agreeing to these on the consent agenda if the situation changes? I'd like to know one way or another, you know, if do we just abstain from voting on certain issues rather than committing ourselves and put them back on the agenda after the board of supervisor meeting for the direction we're going in, or what?
Okay, Jeff, I'm hoping you can respond to that.
President Enns, Supervisor Compton, and the rest of the board. I believe these are budgeted expenses. Is that correct, Brooks?
Yes, sir.
Yes. So, and the money that goes into the IWMA that the IWMA has to expend within its budget, if there was a withdrawal, the withdrawing agency doesn't get to pull back money that came from its jurisdiction. So yes, this would be a commitment to spend money that is already in the IWMA budget. So you are correct that it could have a longer term impact should the county withdraw prior to the expiration of these contracts.
Well, and wouldn't it also in fact affect some of the cities too if they chose to pull out too? And or
yes.
So what's your suggestion then? Should we not vote on some of these, or what do we do?
Well, I don't know that you need to not vote on them. The IWMA is still a functioning independent agency, and these are expenses that have been brought before your board for consideration. So how it impacts other agencies that may be looking at other options is something I guess that you could keep in mind, and maybe your suggestion would be to put some of these on hold to bring them back later. Certainly that's within the board's discretion.
Okay. Well, I don't know if there's any appetite to do that, but I guess I would suggest we do that. And Brooks could determine which items these are, but there are several of them that have long-term consequences. So I don't know. I guess I'll wait till after consent public comment is over and then make a motion. And if I get a second, I get a second. If not, no. Okay, well,
public comment is over on the
on everything. Okay.
Agenda items. Yes.
So I guess I'll wait till, I shouldn't have said public comment. I should say board comment. I'll wait till after board comments are over and then I'll make a motion.
President Enns, is Jeff Heller.
Yes, Jeff, please go ahead.
I'd like to pull consent items 11 and 12 for questions and discussion.
Hammond would also agree with that.
Okay, we'll pull items 11 and 12. Anyone else?
I just had a question. I don't need to pull. I just had a question on 8. Debbie?
Okay, go ahead, Debbie.
Yeah, my question was just to ask, what I think I'm reading in this staff report is that this corporate e-waste solutions has been doing business with IWMA, and this is just updating a contract.
Brooks, did you want me to jump in on that?
Yeah, I think I got this one okay. The idea here is that they have more money to share with us. And so they're going to, instead of charging us for the disposal, we get credited for that. So nice. It's going to be an offset. It'll be $4,000 or $5,000 of, I equate it to free hauling. So they'll actually come and take the palletized material and recycle it, and we won't even have to pay for the hauling.
Nice. So, but my question, it talks about the different landfills, Chicago Grade, Coal Canyon, Heritage, other spots. They just pick up at the IWMA has these different drop-off locations for e-waste. And then these guys come in and haul it for us, used to cost, and now it's going to be a credit.
Correct. It'll offset that cost of collection.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Debbie. Anyone else wishing to have an item pulled for separate discussion?
Robert, I don't wish to pull an item. I did have a question. And so I can wait on the question, but in regards to Supervisor Compton's concerns, I understand the conceptual concern, but in looking at specific items, I'm wondering from Brooks, I don't see any of them that are particularly long-term or large at this point. And my question would be, generally contracts, I was trying to look at one real quick, but generally, you know, they have cancellation provisions. You know, which sometimes costs you, sometimes doesn't. But I'm trying to alleviate Supervisor Compton's concern. I think in this case, they're either fairly small in nature.
I agree.
Or, you know, so I understand a conceptual concern, but I'm thinking that there's not a specific one on this list that would, you know, commit us to a large dollar amount for a large number of years. And would be affected too adversely by any eventuality we might face. So I'm wondering if maybe Brooks or Jeff could be reassuring in that regard and try to address your concern.
If I may, so if we're going to pull them, I'll discuss them individually, or I can discuss them now. It's you let me know.
Let me make a suggestion here. I know, for example, on item 10, which is the agreement to have the HHW at the Morro Bay plant, this proposal is for a 2-year extension of that contract. And I'm confident that whatever happens in the future, that facility that contract will be honored by someone, because that's a facility that's very needed. So,
and I think it's a dollar a year. So.
That is correct. It's a dollar a year. And it is for Morro Bay and Cayucas.
Mr. Chairman, Bruce. Yes. Mr. Chairman, I move approval of consent items 6 through 10.
Hammond seconds on that.
Motion and a second. Any other discussion? Cheryl, roll call vote, please.
Just for clarification, I'm so sorry. I have a second from Mr. Hammond. Who was my first, please?
Ms. Bruce.
Mr. Gibson.
Okay, Mr. Gibson, and that was to approve items 6 through 10 on the consent agenda. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay, so Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
Ms. Arnold?
Yes.
Mr. Burbeau?
Yes.
Ms. Bright?
Yes.
Ms. Compton?
Yes.
Mr. Heller?
Yes.
Ms. Pease?
Yes.
Mr. Newton?
Yes.
Ms. Ortiz-Legge?
Yes.
Mr. Pichon?
Yes.
Mr. Storton?
Yes.
And Mr. Enns?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously, 13-0.
Okay. Thank you, Cheryl. With that, we'll take item number 11.
Okay. So my thoughts about this, Brooks, there are a lot of theaters in the county. There seem to be only a few on this list. Can you talk to us about why that is the case and what your strategy is in using this marketing in movie theaters, which may or may not be in great attendance at this point in time.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Yes, these are just the first theaters to get back with us. Kelly has been actively trying to reach out to all the theaters in every location. Some of them are more active than others and get back to us sooner. So these are just the first two, but our goal would be to cover every theater. And if you look at the actual detail here, we would get 13,600 showings. And to a captive audience, this is showing before the movie begins, and they're just waiting, sitting there eating their popcorn in a dark room, looking at the screen for $13,000. So it's a dollar a piece. So even though there may not be the greatest attendance, but my wife and I have been going back to movies, and there are people there. And so it's a very inexpensive way to catch maybe some of the people. You know, I just showed you we have extensive outreach and education through schools, through businesses, through social media. We do the mailers, we're doing flyers, we're covering the entire spectrum, but we have not done what may be considered some of the old fashioned, but this is catching some of the people that aren't on social media or getting those other things. And we're going back to the basics of movie theaters and billboards. And it's not a very expensive cost for 6 months of exposure and the amount of exposure.
So if more theaters respond, this budget or dollar amount will go up? Is that what you're telling
me? Yes, we would probably bring back an additional amount for those theaters depending on the cost.
And excuse me for not knowing the answer to this question, but are we allowed to have 100% occupancy in movie theaters now, or are we at 50%? Does anybody happen to know?
You're not allowed to have 100% yet.
I was going to say, yes, my experience is there's social distancing and you have to pick your seat and wear your mask.
Okay. Those are my questions.
June 15th.
Mm-hmm.
June 15th, right. And then regarding social media, could you tell me a little bit about what the IWMA is doing with social media?
Yes, sir. So we contract with we outsource that portion, but we're using all of the major Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, etc. And like I said, we have several hundred thousand hits on our website, and we get 500,000 or more digital impressions from people who do internal in this market with their cell phone or computer. We're getting the pop-ups on that. I can give you a full report if you'd like that at the next meeting.
That might be good at the next meeting. Okay. President Ants, those are my questions and comments on number 11.
All right. Thank you. How about number 12? You asked
Robert. Robert, can we stay on this one for a second? John Hammond. Sure. Brooks, a couple questions here. This is the cost to show it. Is there a cost to produce the message?
I'll ask Patty or to Kelly to chime in on that. I think the video is already done.
That is correct. The video is already done. We had it professionally done by Mike DeMilo's team. Great little video. And so that is all included.
And what was the cost of that?
Mike DeMilo did a video production for free because he was doing it as part of a video production that was a long-standing series that he's doing through EcoSlow that has to do with the organics as well as the landfill videos. So he was doing it in production anyways, and he just allowed us to use it. Great partnership.
Thank you, Patty. And what was the content? I mean, have we seen this ourselves? And
I can take you and show it to you. Yeah, we've seen it. Are you talking about Mike DeMilo's entire videos?
No, basically this message that we're trying to put out to the public.
Yeah, it is on getting it into the green card. It shows Stacy, a staff employee for Mike DeMilo. It shows her at an anaerobic digester, which is HZI, with a green can beside her. And in the video, it shows what you put in your food scrap cart and then pouring it into the green container. It's really great.
I'd like for you to pass that on to the members. I think it would be good to see. And why is it then we're basically this same company also handle other theaters, or is it just these two theaters that this company works with?
This is a theater company that handles just the ones we're working with right now. We have reached out to other theaters. We're going through negotiations on rates and trying to get it scheduled. Some theaters, honestly, weren't answering back right away, right? So we're working through the other theaters.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That's all I had.
You're welcome. And I'll take and send out an email after this presentation with every single, the actual video, so you guys can see it.
All right. Thank you, Patty.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other questions on item 11?
Chair Enns, Andy Pease. It's kind of an 11 and 12 combined, and apologies if this was already addressed in prior meetings, but is there kind of an overall strategic marketing plan that's been developed by experts in this field, you know, with budgets for each of these bits and pieces, just so that as these contracts come up, we have an ongoing context, like, oh, this is a budgeted item for this, this is a budgeted item for that. What's kind of the approach to that advertising, and how is it developed?
Okay, I'll refer that to Brooks.
Yes, at this point, we have not paid for that because we have such extensive programs. But if that's something the board would like to see, we could certainly get a price for that and develop that for consideration.
Is it, even if it's developed in-house, is there kind of a strategic plan? This is how we hit this market. This is how we hit that market. I get it that we have kind of ongoing education, but it seems like this is, since this is something new, that maybe it came
To our knowledge,
out of a strategic decision.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, to our knowledge, we've been reaching out through all of what we would consider the cutting edge sources regarding social media. And then again, backing up from that to the traditional mailings, and we have done some other media. And now we're kind of reaching back to see if we can catch more of these people through these last two. So other than we have not really pursued television because of the cost. And I believe we've had some radio in the past, but what are our plans on that? Patty, can you talk about radio?
Absolutely. We are doing radio currently, in fact. We just finished up a current campaign, and then we're going to roll into another campaign. We're going to change it up a little bit, try to focus. Sometimes it'll be residential focus, getting it into the green can. Other times it's just going to be more business focus, especially if we're going through the edible food diversion, or maybe it's just like on a restaurant focus, getting you on the green bin program. So we'll tailor those commercials to specific audiences, as well as we're going to start doing Spanish-speaking radio. We feel like lots of people who work in the industries that we touch on a day-to-day basis are Spanish-speaking, right? And we really need to target those guys with their own language.
Great, thank you. And, you know, as we, once we kind of go into the discussion, I'd be interested in hearing the opinions of colleagues if we need to. Perhaps our staff experience carries us 90% of the way, but, you know, it might be appropriate because this is such a high impact and potentially cost intensive effort on the 1383 that maybe we need to bring in some professional consulting to really make sure that we're touching the bases in the most strategic way possible.
Right. Thank you. Anyone else?
Yeah. Chairman Enns. Oh, I'm sorry. Is there somebody before me? This is Dawn.
Oh, okay. Dawn, please go ahead.
Thank you, sir. I would be in agreement with Andy. I talked a little bit yesterday to Brooks about an outreach effort in regards to children at school that's a little bit more robust than just coming in with a video. So I think that the message is clear that this is going to be a heavy lift for folks, and that a real strategic plan is going to be necessary to look at the options that are most cost effective to get the biggest bang for our buck, to really start to adopt the kinds of habits in order to utilize the green bucket and all of the things that we have. I mean, I think, you know, you're right, Patty, that residential is one thing, but, you know, restaurants are another, and then Spanish speaking, all that sounds good. But I too would like to see something on a more packaged way that is, you know, strategically laid out, on a calendar basis. So we know what we can expect, and we can see it, we can promote it as individual members, et cetera. So that's my comments. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Dawn. Anyone else on item 12?
Robert, Robert, go ahead.
Jeff?
Thank you, President Anz. With respect to the billboards, Brooks, are these existing billboards where we would just put a new advertisement on it, or are we building new billboards? That's kind of my first question. Second one is there a county ordinance or restriction on billboards? Does anyone know what that might be?
My understanding is we are putting a poster on existing billboards that are licensed and legal, and they would be up for about 6 months. And then they rotate throughout the county, so you get additional exposure versus one location. But it is just a poster attached to the existing sign that's permitted.
Okay. And then as part of the marketing effort, are you helping jurisdictions with putting information on their websites?
Patty can speak to that, but yes, we've been partnering with them for quite a while. Go ahead.
Yeah, so each jurisdiction has a link that when you go on there, specific to hazardous waste, or maybe it's recycling, it's going to shoot you right over to the IWMA website. And that's including the county websites as well. Even the smaller CSDs are really good about that too. So we're connecting up via the websites. And when it comes to social media, every month we reach back out to the 7 cities and the county and even the special districts. Because sometimes the special districts don't maybe have Facebook or social media, but maybe they have like a newsletter. So we're reaching back out, connecting up, and getting likes and connections with the cities, county, and the special districts in that way too, once a month.
Okay. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Those are my questions and comments, President Anz.
Thank you.
Robert, John Hammond had another question.
Yes, John, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. This is being a state initiative, 1383. What is the state doing to get the word out? Does anybody know what their budget is to inform and then educate?
I don't know what they're doing exactly regarding education. I can say that they've put extensive effort into developing the training and the modules for the jurisdictions like us. And so their effort has been designed to educate us or help us get the message out for them. Do you know of anything beyond that they're doing, Patty?
Yeah, in all fairness, it's really a monumental task, right? As we know, even at our local level, getting the message out and cutting through the white noise on whatever you're trying to get out is extremely challenging. So all I can say is that when we reach out to Cal Recycle, they are absolutely on their game. They're very responsive to us. We ask literally 60 questions a week, running it up through the legal ladder. We have a great relationship with them. We work well with them. They're responsive. I don't know. I wish that there was more funding, right, in the forms of grants or whatever. And they keep saying that more funding is going to be coming, whether it helps with the edible food portion or, I don't know, maybe even container purchases. We haven't really seen that yet. But I really think I have a good feeling with Cal Recycle and a good working relationship.
Patty, would you kind of say then this is like an unfunded mandate from the state again?
Yeah. Well, I always say that, right? It's the ban without a plan, right? And that's just me being snarky. But yeah, it is. But again, they are working hard and they're great. They're helping us along through this. They're really working hard with us too.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Anz.
All right. Thank you, John. And thank you for that response, Patty. So I guess we're looking for either further comment on 11 or 12 or a motion to approve 11 and 12.
Robert, I had a question on number 12, please. Okay. This is Keith. Thank you. I was just curious. One of the callers had brought it up in regards to the billboards. I think since we are the IWMA and we are asking people to meet certain expectations, I was curious, is the material that's used on these billboards recyclable, reusable, or just a one-time use?
It is going to be a one-time use, Keith. It's like when we send out a mailer, it's a one-time use. Sorry about that.
I just wanted to ask the question.
Yeah.
Thanks. I have a question too about the billboards. What's the message on the billboard? I mean, you drive by and you're telling people what? I'm not exactly sure about this expenditure. It's like drive by and what do you see?
It's going to be something around the effect of getting it into the green card. It's going to try to be a positive, thank you for getting it in the green bin. It's going to be, the graphics are being developed now. We'll take and show you guys the graphics in advance. It's going to have poppies. It's going to show the seven sisters. It's going to be really slow centric. The whole county will be involved in this billboard. And again, the message is plain and simple. Get it out of the gray card, get it into the green card.
Okay, thank you. Good question.
Uh-huh. President Enns?
Yes.
Yeah, Jeff Heller again. Due to the fact we have so many questions and concerns about these two items, would it be appropriate for me to move that we pull these items completely and have an item we may come back with more detailed information at our next meeting?
I'll accept the motion. We're shopping for a second.
I'll second. Andy P. second to table these to date uncertain.
Table. That was the word I was looking for. Thank you.
You bet.
thanks.
Okay. Any discussion on the motion?
Yes. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes, Robert, this is Charles. Yes. Question to staff on that. These being contracts that are kind of more or less ready to sign, if the board had approved them today, are there any implications to the delay? I mean, I don't have a problem with the delay unless there's any implications relative to the contract, i.e. the advertising space not being available, et cetera. So are there any ramifications of delaying?
There is that ramification. You're spot on that. The reason we are getting the steel is because we're the first one out of the gate and in the door. Another unintended consequence, no offense, is that, you know, the more we delay education, the more we're going to pay on the back end with enforcement. And again, the county and the cities need to do the enforcement. So the faster we get this train rolling forward and get it people into this, the better off we're going to be.
That being said, I mean, this would be, I guess, an alteration to the motion on the floor. I would move approval of number 11 and vote on 12 separately, because I think there's more concerns because of the disposable nature of the billboard.
Excuse me, President Enns, but we do have a motion and a second to accept 11 and 12. So we go through a roll call vote and then take 12 separately as a second motion.
Okay. Yes, that's correct.
Well, there can still be discussion, though, before the vote, right?
Yes, we can still discuss motion on 11 and 12.
Mr. Chairman, if you mind, this is Bruce. I mean, the motion maker is welcome to withdraw his motion if he wants and state a motion that he would like to put before this board.
I'd like to call the question.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. Roll call vote, please, Cheryl.
Please clarify the motion for that.
Thank you, Jeff.
Sure. So the motion is that item 11 and 12 on the consent agenda be tabled, and that the IWMA come back at our next meeting with more information responding to the questions that have been raised here.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. Roll call vote, Cheryl.
Mr. Heller?
Yes.
Ms. Pease?
Yes.
Ms. Arnold?
Yes.
Mr. Burbeau?
Yes.
Ms. Bright?
Yes.
Ms. Compton?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
Mr. Newton? Mr. Newton, you are muted.
No.
No.
Correct, no.
Ms. Ortiz-Legs?
Yes.
Mr. Pichon?
No.
Mr. Storton?
No.
And Mr. Enns?
Yes.
Motion carries 10 to 3.
Okay, with that, did someone want to make an additional motion on item 12?
Well, I would, you know, what I'm looking for, let me just say to staff, and I don't know, I'm not ready to make a motion on this, but I think it's you know, I certainly appreciate staff's efforts to get ahead of this and to make sure that we are out of the gate first. And, you know, I don't want to delay that. But what I'm feeling like is that we're not really seeing, since this is such a big, heavy lift, as I said before, that we're not seeing a strategic approach to be able to really know that we can, what we're spending our money on and what our choices are. I would really like to see us utilize some of the our partners in the nonprofit world that could benefit in a way that I think would have a much bigger exposure and a bang. And I just, you know, I'm not sure how to get there with this at this time. I know we talked about this to be towards the end of the year, but it seems like there's things that we could be doing, and I think we need to plan a little bit better. And that's just the statement I wanted to make.
Okay, thank you. Don, anyone else?
John Pashon.
John, please go ahead.
Yep, I think we should move on this and approve it. I'm looking at it from a micromanagement standpoint. I don't think we as a board need to micromanage staff this way. This is their best decision. They came up with this idea, and I think we should move it forward. I think it's time to move it.
Okay, well, we have a motion to approve motion to delay this for till the next meeting. I do agree with you, John, that we need to move on and we should have confidence in staff. I think the issue here was perhaps allowing the board to see what was going to be on the billboards, and maybe that brought up some questions. So seeing no additional motion, then what I do is we'll close consent.
Was there going to be a motion on number 12? I'm sorry. I thought that last one was on.
No one put forward a motion on 12.
Thank you.
Well, the prior motion was on 11 and 12.
That's correct.
That's correct.
Thank you. Okay.
Okay. So now we'll go to the regular agenda items. And that really is just board member comments and future agenda items.
Robert, I do. I'd like to propose something for a future agenda. I brought it up probably at the inappropriate time earlier in the meeting, but in order to be proactive and not reactionary to particularly what Supervisor Compton mentioned about, there's a lot of unknown moving forward and we're trying to make discussions and agreements about a future we're uncertain about. I'd like to incorporate in a future meeting possible opportunities to have discussions publicly about attractive ways that can keep us together. I'm not sure what that can look like or if I have agreement, but I'd like to propose that and get consensus to move that forward.
Okay. Anyone else?
I would go along with Director Keith Storton on trying to avoid having to have more expenditures unnecessary. I mean, I think our responsibility is to the rate payers. And if we can avoid any, if there's a way to salvage things, that'd be really great. So that's where I'm at.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Inns, Hammond.
Yes.
Again, just to put it out there, I'm directing the staff of Paso Robles to investigate, just like the county is right now, what it's going to take to do this on our own. Again, with what happened this last time around, where, again, my colleagues that wanted to extend the hand over, you know, member agencies that weren't complying with their thoughts and wishes, that just what didn't sit well, won't ever sit well. Never going to be forgotten for that reason. But on the other hand, I don't want to have the opportunity really to say we're leaving because of that. I want to have the opportunity to say we could do this on our own. And that's why our staff is getting the answers, been working with Brooks, staff's been working with him. This is important to understand really what we're getting into. IDMA has had a long history of helping agencies in our county, you know, get through this. Now we're taking a huge step with regard to this unfunded liability that the state has put on us that we all have to take a bite on. And again, I think it's important that we, you know, deal with this. On the other hand, again, it's just didn't sit well with what happened the other day. And, you know, we're going to figure it out. I think the county's working on it. I haven't talked with the county, but I know our staff is figuring out what it's going to take to do this on our own. So hopefully we can, you know, come out the other end. But right now, that's the position of Pastor Robles.
Okay, thank you for that upgrade, John. Any other comments?
Robert, this is Charles Borbeau. I don't, you know, have any objection to us having discussions about this. I'm not sure. I don't want to, you know, rehash the same stuff over and over again as we wait for the county or let's say, you know, Pastor Robles to make a determination. So I'm with Keith Storton on it probably warrants some discussion, but I don't want to have it a thing where we just belabor the same issues over and over, that we stick to talking about practical ramifications so that people have some context about, you know, what's required of agencies to do and what the implications are if they're not doing it as part of this existing JPA, and what would happen to the remaining agencies. So I certainly don't object to having those kind of discussions. I just don't want to rehash the same old ground every time we have the discussion. So what I'm getting at is I'm not sure if it's premature to put it on the immediate next agenda or not. I mean, I have mixed feelings about it.
Okay, thank you, Charles. I would just suggest that we keep this on the next agenda and simply get an update. I think Brooks can do that for us, and we'll know what the county's doing and what they're thinking, and we're just going to have to keep up with it as it moves forward. And any suggestions that we might have that might be helpful would certainly could go directly to Brooks. Any other comments?
Just for President Ann's, Jeff Heller.
Yes, Jeff.
I think your comment about an update at future meetings is a good idea. I agree with Mr. Borbeau and others who don't want to get into a protracted discussion of things we've talked about a whole bunch already, but I think an update of what's going on, a short update would be appropriate. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. So just for the record, I'm going to open this to public comment. And Barbara, are you still here?
Yes, I am. Okay, at this time, if a member of the public wishes to make a comment, you may hit the raise hand button found at the bottom of your screen. Or if you're on the phone, you may hit *9. Okay, Janine, I think your hand was raised. Give me one second. Oh, where'd you go? Okay, Janine, you should be able to unmute yourself.
I think I'm unmuted.
You are.
Okay. Appreciate the conversation. I'm read through all the letters that were submitted to the board this morning, and I just noted one of the writers that said we have a significant number of influential clubs and groups out there, like the Rotary and off the top of my head, that are all looking for good speakers. And this is the population group that need the education. The kids at getting these wonderful lectures by the Science Discovery are fantastic, but they're not ones filling the dumpsters and the trash cans and the blue bins. It's the senior citizens that don't go to school. It's the moms and dads that don't get this education from their kids. Their kids might say, "Mom," and mom goes, "I'm doing this. On my street, we see it every week. The abuse to the blue bins, the abuse to the green bins, and it's the senior citizens. So the Kiwanis and the Rotaries and all these other groups, those need the education. Back to the billboard thing, cars are driving 75 miles an hour. And so they're not looking at a billboard. So
Janine, hold on. Jeff?
President Nance, this is not related to the matter just discussed.
Oh,
I appreciate Ms. Rand's comments, but they were.
All righty. Toodles.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. Anyone else public comments? Barbara?
I have no other public comment.
Okay. With that, we'll be going to closed session for items 14 and 15. And Jeff, do you want to announce those for us?
Would you take a public comment on closed session, please?
We can open this public comment on closed session items.
Okay, at this time, if someone wishes to make comment on the closed session agenda, you may hit the raise hand button found at the bottom of your screen, or if you're on the phone, you may hit *9. I see no hands raised.
Okay, thank you, Barbara. Jeff, back to you. Close public comment.
Thank you. The board will adjourn to closed session. Two items: conference with legal counsel regarding pending litigation. This is pursuant to Government Code 54956.9A. Plaintiff is the matter is entitled Knudsen versus Slo County IWMA. The second matter is Executive Director's annual performance evaluation pursuant to Government Code Section 54957B1.
Jeff, are we just staying on the same line or do we have to call into another line? Because if so, I don't know if I have the link.
No, I understand we're staying on the same line and they're just blocking everyone else out.
Okay.
Yeah, so everybody from the general public, if you could please leave the meeting.
If I could just make one comment for the record, we will be reporting on any recordable actions in the minutes if anything takes place for the members of the public. So I just wanted to make that statement.
Okay, and thank you, Cheryl. And
one other thing, if there's anything other than no reportable action, I ask staff to post it on the website.
Okay, but we will be going back to open for adjournment. Is that correct?
No.
No.